Hello and welcome to the call. I'd like to give you a little information about how the call will work and then we'll get started. I'd appreciate it if everyone would kindly hit the 6 button. If you'd kindly hit the 6 button on your phone so we can mute all background noises, and that's everyone except our guest. And then at the end, I will take a few questions, and at that time, I'll ask those of you who have any questions to just push the 6 button again so we can hear you. The format for the call is simply that I will interview our guest, Prill Boyle, who will be the who is the second guest in our series, Finding Purpose at Midlife. Our first guest was Anne Marie Kelly, and she's the author of Victorious Woman, Shaping Life's Challenges into Personal Victories. If you're a member of the association, you should be able to listen to and read that teleseminar shortly. It'll go in the member updates. Today, Prill is going to be talking about stepping out of our comfort zones and learning techniques to take risks and create the life of our dreams. And then, not next week, but the following, Karen Gail Lewis is going to talk about discovering how the relationships that we have can keep us from our dreams. So anyway, that's what's happening with this series, and we're glad you're on the call today. If you've just entered, if you'd kindly push the 6 button so that you can mute any background noises, we'd appreciate it. Okay, for those of you who don't know me, I am Dotsie Bregel, and I'm founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which can be found at nabbw.com, and boomerwomenspeak.com. Both are the number one sites on major search engines for baby boomer women. I'm very passionate about educating and empowering my generation of women. And since launching boomerwomenspeak.com over 5 years ago, I've been connecting, encouraging, and supporting boomer women on a daily basis. I feel like I have my finger on the pulse of this spirited generation, and I dedicate a great portion of my time to creating opportunities that will just inspire women to explore their passions and live them to the fullest, which is why I'm really excited about this month's topic. So anyway, our sites are proudly sponsored by Dolans.com, and that's D-O-L-A-N-S.com. If you're interested in excellent financial information that will encourage you to live a more financially responsible midlife, you should definitely visit their site. And then we are also sponsored by Elations, which can be found at Elations.com, and that is a daily drink supplement that offers relief for joint aches and pains. And it's an alternative to taking the big pills that apparently you have to take when you have those joint aches and pains. This way you can just drink one little jug a day, and it's quite tasty. So anyway, if you're not a member of the NABBW, the fee to join is typically $75. But if you're on the call today and not a member, you are welcome to join for $50. All you have to do is email me, dots@nabbw.com. And I can send you the reduced link to join for $50. This teleseminar, along with all of our past teleseminars for the past 2 years, are archived on our sites, and you can listen to them. And if you don't like to listen while you're on your computer, you can print them because we also have them transcribed. And all past teleseminars are yours free when you join the association, and there's quite a collection now. So, anyway, that's about all the business we have to talk about. So I'd like to introduce Prill. Prill, are you there?
I am here.
Very good. Okay, if anyone's entered the call late, if you'd be kind enough to push the 6 button so we can mute background noises, that would be great. Okay, Prill is the author of Defying Gravity, A Celebration of Late-Blooming Women. Actually, Prill's book was once one of the tangible benefits for joining the association. At one time, we had the choice of her book and another gal's book, Karen Barr, and I know we sent a lot of books around this country for Prill, and we've gotten great feedback on that book. I also had the pleasure of meeting Prill when she was driving through Baltimore to D.C. one time, and she came to my home and got to see the Boomer headquarters, and we got to have lunch together in Towson, which was great fun. And then I also saw her again with a bunch of other Boomer women in New York City when the NABBW was invited to be on the CBS Early Show in New York outside with Dave Price. So Pearl came and dined with a bunch of us at Carmine's the night before and then was right next to me when we did the CBS show. So I'm really happy to have her on the call. Pearl defines herself as a late bloomer, and she graduated from Georgetown University at age 38. She became a high school English teacher at age 40, and then started writing full-time at age 47. So now she's 54, and she's the founder of the Defying Gravity Workshop, and she's been featured on numerous radio and television programs and has spoken to groups all over the world about the challenges and rewards of finding passion and purpose at any age. And Pearl is currently working on a novel. So welcome, Pearl. How are you today?
Oh, I'm very well. Thank you, Dotsy. And I have to say that the pleasure of meeting you was, it's mutual. You're just so fabulous. And everything you said about yourself in the beginning, you didn't oversell yourself. You do actually every day. You know, work with boomers, try to encourage, empower, and help boomers connect. And you've just been incredible in that regard. So,
oh, well, thank you. I surely didn't expect all that, but that's nice. And
I'll give you a testimonial.
Yeah, and as you know, it's like my passion, and I feel called to it by God. So I think that makes a big difference.
So let's help some people today. Let's see what we can do.
Yes. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay. Well, the title, and just to kind of review for all of you and let you know what you're in for, is Defying Gravity, Life's Second Act. And a lot of people refer to midlife as a second adulthood. You know, Pearl refers to it as a second act, which I think is fun. And the tagline is step out of your comfort zone and learn techniques for taking risks and creating the life of your dreams. So we're going to get started, and Pearl is going to walk us through how we should do this. So the first question I have for you, Pearl, is how do we begin to trust in ourselves?
Great question, and I could approach this from a lot of angles, but I'm gonna start by saying this, and that is that I believe strongly that we all have an inner wisdom. Our bodies have an inner wisdom, our hearts have wisdom, and so the first, very, very, very first preliminary step, at least one way to handle this, is just to slow down, be present, and ask yourself, just feel your body, and ask yourself, you know, how does it feel? For instance, let me be more specific. If you're facing some kind of a decision or you're contemplating a change, does your heart sing with the kinds of ideas that you're coming up with, or does your stomach clench? I remember a long, long time, it seems like a long time ago now, this was before I went to Georgetown University in my early 30s, and I got offered a job working for an actuarial firm making $50,000 a year, which seemed at the time to me like an exorbitant amount of money. And I just, you know, I was excited about the idea of the money. I needed the money, but my stomach, I was losing sleep thinking about it. My stomach was going up and down. I refer to my stomach because that's where I hold a lot of tension. And I decided in listening to my body that it wasn't worth it. And that's when I decided that rather than, you know, continuing on the same kind of career path I'd been on, I was just a secretary. So when I say working for an actuarial firm, it was just as a secretary, but it was a lot of money for a secretary. But I decided I wanted to go back to school and get certified to teach, get a degree in English. And when I thought about that, my heart just sang. So I would say, you know, listen to your body. An exception to this, you know, stomach clenching kind of feeling, heart sinking kind of feeling, and my advice to avoid those situations or to step away from those is that if you're afraid of something, and Dotsy, I want to talk about this, and I'm hoping, I think that you're going to be asking me questions about this, but I really want to talk about ways to walk through fear, because I feel like it's our fear that keeps us so often from pursuing our dreams. So the first part is to listen to your body, and the second thing is to pay attention, be present, and look for signs and signals. I feel like the universe, whatever I don't know what religion anybody here is, if you're any religion at all, but in some ways, when you're open, when you are open for change, there's a lot of information that can come to you if you keep your eyes and ears open as well as your heart. So that's a start.
That, you know what, that's a great start. And I can share just a teeny little bit about how BoomerWomenSpeak.com was launched, because it was during a valley in my life after my mom had died. I had three kids in high school who were all soon leaving for college, and I was asking myself, like, I had worked myself out of a job because I had been a stay-at-home mom, and I was asking myself the same questions my kids were, and that was the main one, was what do I want to be when I grow up? Mm-hmm. And so I was, you know, I was at a point of transition, and exactly what you've said, Pril, is what I did. I already had a habit of morning prayer time, but I became really intentional about saying, Lord, what are you calling me to do? And I had some things come up that just kind of, I thought, no, you know, I really don't want to do that now. And I just stuck with it. I really wanted to work for myself was my big thing, because I wanted to be available to my children still, you know, to visit at college and do things like that. So I knew what I wanted. And if I worked for someone else, I didn't think I would have the flexibility or the freedom. So I stuck with, okay, I want to be self-employed. And then, it was through that prayer time and really searching myself and saying, what are my gifts, that I was able to feel excited about this idea of launching a website. So I do think you have to say no to some things, and just know that sometimes when you say no, it's an opportunity for a yes that may better suit you. So
exactly.
I totally agree. But
I don't have prayer time in my life, not specifically the way you do, but I do something very similar in the morning.
Okay.
That really helps me, which is I have my journaling time.
Okay.
And it's a time where I touch base with myself. So I was saying a minute ago, trust your inner wisdom. Well, that's easier said than done sometimes. But for me, through journal, and there's a lot of ways to do this. Prayer is one way. Mm-hmm. Journaling is another. Mm-hmm. Walking. Sometimes people take walks, and just that quiet time. In any event, somehow to slow down and try to listen to what your heart is saying.
Yep, that's right. And some people, when I do these teleconferences, they'll say, okay, and do you have one last message that you want to leave with people? And I'll say, you know what, it's really kind of contrary to what our society is used to, because we live in a rat race, not the human race. And I'll say, you know, and what I share is, my message is to be still. So, you know, whether it's doing yoga, whether it's walking, journaling, praying, whatever it is, it's really just to kind of get centered and know who you are.
Exactly.
And what you have to offer for the good of others, because that's when you're really working within your passion. Okay, so let's talk about fear, because I know a little bit about that personally. So can you teach us how to become less fearful?
This is such a critical issue, and we're all, you know, rest assured, we are all afraid. I mean, even those of us that strut around, you know, when I'm giving a speech sometimes, matter of fact, the other night I gave quite a large speech, and a number of people came up to me and said, I want to be you. And I think they think because, you know, when I'm speaking, it's like I'm so jazzed and I'm connecting with people, and I'm in my passion, and I'm doing in that very moment what I want to do. And it's easy, I think, to look at someone like that, or to look at a Bill Gates. I don't want to compare myself to Bill Gates. We're completely in different categories. But you know, look at a Oprah or, you know, I'm trying to think of people in all different walks of life that are really living their passion, and think to yourself, my gosh, you know, they're just fearless and they're so accomplished, etc. But we all have fears. So back to the question, how can one become less fearful? What I did, and I suggest other people try to do in some form, is that when I got the idea to write Defying Gravity on January 31st, 2000, I can tell you the date I got this idea, I knew it was going to be a scary process for me to write a book. I had never written anything before. I was afraid to call people up to get interviews, etc. And I started practicing. I just made this up. I started practicing doing a bold thing every day.
Ooh, great advice.
I have done this for now. I mean, January 31st, 2000, it's been over 8 years. So I do a bold thing a day, and I define bold as anything, remember what I was saying about tension in my stomach, anything that makes my stomach go up and down, I do it rather than walk away from it. You know, within reason, I mean, I'm not going to hurt myself.
Yeah, can you give us some examples of little things just to get us started?
Yes.
Okay.
Here's a very little thing for me that, again, I define it as being bold. I would be out at dinner, and my husband loves smelly cheeses, and he'd say, you know, try some blue cheese.
Ooh,
he's always teasing me. And I would try the cheese, and I would chalk that up as being my bold thing that day. I might call somebody that, you know, here's another really good example, real-life example. I got invited early on to a party, just a simple party here in town where I live in Westport, Connecticut. This was in 2000. You know, I frequently get invited to parties, and I didn't have a real excuse. I mean, I couldn't say no because I had something else to do. And rather than lying, I decided that I would tell the truth about why I didn't want to come, which was simply that what I really wanted to do was that I didn't. What I said to this woman, her name was Lee, I said, you know, Lee, I love you, and I'd love to get together with you for coffee, but I'm really not in a mode right now where I want to do that kind of socializing. I mean, I was just really honest.
Awesome.
And she was actually very appreciative of it. And that day, that was my bold thing. I mean, I actually thought about this. I got the email invitation, and I thought to myself, you know, I really want to tell the truth instead of just make some excuse. And it was making my stomach go up and down, but I did it. And then that has progressed to my going to Africa last year for a month and giving, you know, 6 speeches with the Peace Corps. I mean, the bar keeps going up for me, but it started out very, very small. Here's another little tip about this. Early on, I solicited a friend of mine, Tamara Meyer, to become my bold partner.
Ooh, like that. Okay.
So Tamara and I, for years, would call each other up every week or so. I mean, some people could be very, very methodical about it and put it on their calendar, but we didn't do that. We weren't that formal about it. But we talked with each other every week or week and a half, and we would check in and say, what's the boldest thing you did this week, Tammy? And she'd say, what's the boldest thing you did this week, Prill? And just knowing that I was going to talk to Tammy and just knowing that she was going to talk to me spurred us on to be bolder and to come up with bold things so that we would have something to say more than I ate blue cheese, although she would celebrate that with me if that was what I had said. So that was something else that we did with that.
Ooh, that's a great idea. Okay, what else? You know, I've heard as far as facing fears that one of the best things you can do is voice the fear to another person, just to kind of, you know, admit to someone, to the world or whatever, that you have a fear, and that oftentimes that person can help you walk through that fear. So I guess that's similar to having the bold partner. But
but it's a really good tip, and it's enough different. I mean, it's a take on it, and I think it's a great tip. And I think it also goes in the other direction. In other words, it really helps to tell somebody, if you have a dream, to articulate it out loud, to have the courage to say, I want to write a novel, or I want to start an organization, or I want to find a way to work at home. Once you say these things out loud, whether it's your fears or your dreams, we don't want to get off the topic of fear yet because I think it's a really rich, important topic. But when you say something aloud, with fears, I think it defangs your fears.
Mm-hmm.
With dreams, it empowers them. So not keeping things inside can really help to clear the air.
Yeah, and, you know, I admitted a fear to this woman in a class that I was with one time. She said, oh, I used to have that fear, but the more I did it, it just went away. And I just thought, oh, God, she simplified it. I mean, you know, just do it, and keep doing it, and then it's not a fear anymore. So I thought that, gosh, it was such a great, you know, just in a nutshell for me, it just was like, oh my gosh, you know. So
and that's another thing about not keeping all of your, you know, deep, dark, or light thoughts to yourself, is that when you talk to other people, when you open up to others and you're honest about your feelings, mm-hmm. not only is it very healing for other people, but you find how connected we are to each other, that we all ultimately have very similar, if not the same, hopes and fears.
Right.
And so it makes it all, as you said, and I never really thought of it this way. I would maybe use different language, but I love what you said. It just makes it simple. It's mm-hmm. no longer so twisted and complicated.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. and I don't know. That's interesting. But, you know, and I've had to kind of put a little plug in for the forums at BoomerWomenSpeak.com because we have a forum community there with over 60 forums where women pretty much communicate 24/7. And in those forums, we really share things from our heart. There's something about the anonymity that's in a forum community, because you can come in with a screen name. You don't have to be yourself, but many people in there are in there, you know, with their real names or whatever. But, you know, and this could kind of be similar to journaling, but, you know, when you write something down, when you put something out there, you recognize kind of what your fears are, and then people respond, and you see how they've dealt with them, and you know, you can kind of turn that fear around. So anything else on fears?
Well, you know, you reminded me when you were talking about the forums, and I haven't participated in them for a while, but there was about a year there that I was pretty active, and I found them really helpful, and it was like an online, very safe, very supportive support group. And what I ended up doing a little bit after I was engaged in the forums is I formed a support group. I almost don't even like that word. We call it our Creative Women's Business Group. Four of us, Creative mm-hmm. Women's Business Group. Mm-hmm. Four of us here in town where I live. We get together every other Friday morning. One of them works, so we get together. One of them works outside. We all work, but one of them works outside the home. Mm-hmm. And so we get together early in the morning, and we get together for an hour and 15 minutes. We actually set a clock, so each of us gets 10 minutes to present what we've been doing the last 2 weeks in terms of bringing our creative life to, you know, to make a living from it is really where it started. We wanted to make living from our art, to make money from our art. And we are incredibly supportive. And it's not only – so we act as one another's board of directors almost, where we can bounce ideas. But over time, because this is for women – and maybe this would be true as well of men, but I think that for us, being for women in particular – we're so supportive, and then we, you know, sometimes we end up crying, or, you know, we end up talking about our fears, and now we've started to travel together. We travel together twice a year, and so it's really blossomed into something else. But about fear, which is what we're talking about, I'm not somebody, you know, I'm somebody that likes to present to the world a very together front, and over time to have three other women that are letting down their guard to the point where their heart is totally on their sleeve, they're much more forthcoming than I am. It's really kind of opened me wide open, so that at this point I'm very, I actually look forward to telling them what I'm concerned about or what I feel, whatever. In other words, it's another method. And it has a lot of different uses, but it's definitely been another method for me to help me face my fears, find out how they're fine. Everything's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. That's always the message. And it's really been wonderful. So support group is another good idea.
Okay, good. Okay, we've got to get moving along.
We've got to move on.
Yes. Okay, okay. What about exploring inner longings?
Great. You know, I used to teach English, as you said in the introduction, and this may or may not resonate with our listeners here, but I highly recommend, if you are one of those people that's still wondering what do you want to be when you grow up, or what do you want for your next act, if you think of your life as a series of chapters, which is where that metaphor comes from, I highly recommend writing your obituary.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds morbid, doesn't it, Dottie?
Yeah, I've heard this before. Yeah, but it's a good thing to do. I've done it.
And there's two ground rules that I think really shape it and make it an inspirational exercise rather than something that could be upsetting, perhaps. And the two ground rules are, one, imagine that you've lived to be at least 90. So give yourself enough time to do whatever it is that you would imagine doing. And the second ground rule is to dare to be outrageous. So in other words, as you're writing this fictional account of what you've done in your life, to force yourself, if you will, not to worry about how much money, talent, time, connections, education, whatever, that whatever bubbles out would take to fulfill. And that's the whole secret. When you write an obit, or perhaps if that doesn't resonate with you, I heard about a woman at a talk I gave in New Hampshire that wrote a letter to herself, and it was post-dated 20 years in the future, and it was describing her dream life, her life so far. And she ended up, you know, losing track of this letter. 20 years later, 30 years later, she found it as she was getting ready to move. And it had been very specific, this letter she had written of her dream life. And she said that down to the color of the paint on the walls in her house, her letter almost exactly mimicked her present life. I mean, she didn't imagine becoming what she said in this letter that she had become. She couldn't have really imagined actually doing it, but she had imagined it. She had put it on paper. And Dotsie, this relates to what we were saying before about getting, you know, your thoughts aloud or on paper or whatever. So in any event, some method to let your subconscious bubble to the surface can be very helpful for exploring inner longings. The other thing I would say, besides just the fact of, well, actually, this is related, so I'm going to say this in a linear fashion. Another thing I would say, and I think this is really important in today's age, is try not to think so much about finding a calling, one particular passion. I think people these days are treating finding a calling like finding a soulmate, and we know what a minefield that can be when you're looking for one person out of 6.6 billion that matches a certain set of criteria. If you can just let yourself experiment and play a little, if you love to paint, take a painting class. If you think you like science, don't worry about becoming a doctor right away. Just think about perhaps taking a biology class in a community college, Biology 101. Picking up, you know, a book of piano songs and start playing the piano again. So just experiment a little and don't put that pressure on you. Use a low-stakes approach and just play a little bit. Let that subconscious come out. Listen to your body. Listen to your heart. But just take little baby steps and see where it leads you.
Mm-hmm. I think baby steps is a really important thing to talk about, because some people think that it has to be all done in one fell swoop. And really, you know, nothing can be done that way. Everything really should be broken down into baby steps. And then if you at least start one instead of thinking of it as a whole project and I can't start this until I have time, well, maybe you can't do the whole project till you have time, but you can do something working towards that project. So I really think that the baby steps is a big piece and something that we should listen to.
Exactly. Linda Bach, this woman that I interviewed that's in my book, that became a doctor at 50, she really, talk about her heart singing, she really got this, you know, this dream that was reawakened in her 40s of becoming a doctor, but the idea of it was so intimidating. The idea of going back to school, of taking the pre-med classes that she hadn't taken since she was 18, 19, 20, the idea of taking her MCATs, her board exams, in other words, very intimidating, then thinking about the residency, the money. I mean, you can imagine how her mind was spinning out of control, and her husband, Bill, sat her down at the kitchen table and said, "Linda, do you want this? Is this what you want? Is this what you would have liked? You know, if you look forward to being 70, is this really what you want to do?" And she said, "Oh, I would just be in heaven if I could actually become a doctor." And he said, "Well, then don't get ahead of yourself. He said, just take one class. Sign up for Chemistry 101 and see how it feels, and then go from there. And so, in other words, we were talking in the very beginning, Dotsie, about being present, slowing down. He, in a very practical way, said to her, hey, honey, wait, slow down.
That is exactly right.
Put the brakes on. Just take, sign up for that first, for one class, you know, see how it feels. And one class led to the other, and she is, at age 50, she was, she graduated from medical school, University of Miami Medical School, and she was elected president of her class.
Mm. So, that's something we'll talk about at the end is your book, but there are some really encouraging stories in that book about women at midlife who have totally changed their life with the second act. So
exactly.
We'll talk a little bit about that at the end, but let's talk about assessing our gifts because I think that's huge.
It is, because when you talk about this question, what do I want to be when I grow up, it comes back to, well, you know, what are your gifts? What are your talents? What do you love to do? What is that? And a lot of people sort of shrug their shoulders and say, well, I don't know. I just really don't know. I mean, I've heard that again and again. What I have found, and I really hope that our listeners listen to this, because I have interviewed literally face-to-face over 100 late bloomers and many, many more than that online, via the phone, et cetera. And almost every single one of them, almost, I mean, there have been, I will say, a few exceptions, but for almost every one of them, the seeds were there in childhood. They might not have recognized those seeds until they look back in retrospect and put the pieces together. For instance, one woman that I interviewed became an anthropologist in her 50s, and she hardly even knew what the word meant in her 40s when she was getting her GED, her MA, her BA, her MA, and her PhD. She didn't even have a high school diploma in her 40s. But when you look back, when she looked back at her life, when we talked about it, she had been interested in culture and what makes, how culture affects behavior, attitudes, why people behave the way they do, not from a psychological standpoint, but from an anthropological standpoint. Since growing up in Liverpool, England, during World War II, the Luftwaffe bombing her city regularly, she started wanting to understand about what made the Germans different from the English, and it really started way back there. So, to answer the question, how can one assess one's gifts? I would say one very simple thing to do is to very freely make a list, like 1 to 10, of things that you love to do in childhood. And don't censor it. A lot of what I'm saying here today is really about not censoring yourself. You know, nobody has to see these lists. Nobody has to read this obit. Nobody has to see your letter to yourself. It can be between you and you, so you can be honest. But try to excavate a little. What made your heart sing, in other words? What did you love to do? What did people compliment you on? That's one way to start it. Another thing to do that's very practical is that a way to consolidate one's gifts and look at this in a way that's not just, you know, I'm good at art, I was good at dancing, I was good at singing, I was good at, you know, math. But another thing to do is to write your epitaph, which is different from your obituary. The epitaph is a line, one, two lines maximum, that goes on a tombstone that encapsulates the spirit of who you are. For instance, for my father's tombstone, I had printed on it, few exhibit greater generosity. Because for my father, that was the heart of what his real gift was. The essence of his gift was he was this incredibly generous person. My husband is somebody who feels very, very comfortable in his skin, and he's been translating that into doing hospice work. He wouldn't have thought of himself as being a hospice worker, but to be around people that are dying. Dotsie, I'm so sorry to talk about death so much today, but from death comes life.
That's right.
We can talk about rebirth. But being comfortable around yourself is an incredibly important skill if you want to sit next to somebody who is dying. Mm-hmm. I felt And this is really important, and I hope I'm not going on and on, but I'm hoping this will spark something in people.
Sure.
For me, with Defying Gravity, it's not so much that I wanted to be a writer. It's that I was a teacher before this, and before that I was, you know, whatever I was. But I have felt since I was a little girl that my biggest strength, that my gift, was a twofold gift, and both of these things are related to each other, intimately related. One is that I have a gift of seeing the best in people. I see people with kind eyes, and I've always done that, and it's a gift.
I don't
work at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of this is that because of that, I can help people have hope in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was a teacher, for instance, it wasn't that I was that great at teaching Shakespeare and iambic pentameter, but I could help people believe in themselves as readers, as writers, as learners, and I could see that they had the potential to learn because mm-hmm. I could see their beauty. I could see them, I guess. I don't know how to describe it in any more articulate way, but it was from that I wanted to do something larger, and Defying Gravity is really, and my speaking, my talking here today, is really about trying to help people see themselves with kind eyes, to believe in themselves. I see people's potential. So in other words, not to go on and on here, but I'd like people to think a little bit outside of the box when they think of their gifts, because sometimes it's a larger, overarching gift that can manifest itself in a lot of ways.
And when you start discerning those gifts, it's really interesting to see how they can be played out with whatever it is you want to do.
Exactly.
It's pretty cool to see it all go together. Okay, we have to move on because, Pearl, we only have 20 minutes.
And I know, it's 3:40.
Yeah. Okay, how about envisioning future possibilities? Do you want to talk about that vision piece a little bit?
Right. Well, I think, again, this is related to the obit. This is related to writing the letter to yourself. Whatever, to try to stretch your imagination to, I think it's very helpful to read inspiring stories. And at the end, I think we're going to talk about some resources, some books, some DVDs, mm-hmm. some websites, et cetera, that people can go to. I think to immerse yourself in biography, stories, you know, read the newspaper, listen to TV, to realize that there is so much possibility that we have, that we ourselves have so much more potential than we realize. Our lives have more possibilities than we imagine. There's a lot of resources out there that can help you do that. It starts with an openness. It starts with trying to change the self-talk that says, oh, you know, I'm not very smart, or, oh, I'm not very, you know, I'm not very talented, oh, I don't have money. Again, to do these kind of exercises we've been talking about today to try to circumvent that very negative voice. We are, you know, we have so much potential, and I, of all people, not only having been, you know, realizing my own potential, of which I don't even know how much potential I have. I have more than I've realized. But having been a person that has interviewed people that didn't think they were smart, didn't think they were, you know, talented and, you know, have done extraordinary things. I write on my blog, you know, there are blind people that actually are flying. They fly planes. There's a blind bowler I heard yesterday. There are deaf musicians. So in other words, you know, if people with that kind of disability can do those kind of things, what can we with all our faculties not do?
Yeah, great, very good point. Great point. Okay, let's see. How about identifying obstacles? And actually, I'll just put a little plug in at this point for the next call in the series, because Karen Gail Lewis is going to talk about how sometimes our loved ones and people that, you know, we are friends with can be those obstacles, and we don't even realize it just by things that they say and do. But anyway, why don't you talk about some of the obstacles?
Well, you just brought up a really good point, and Gail certainly will go through this in her own. She has her own take on this, and she's, you know, wonderful. I can't, I've met Gail, and I cannot recommend that call enough. But you talked about, you didn't use this word, but you talked about naysayers.
Mm-hmm.
And when one is setting out to do something new, something scary, I think it's very important to try to surround yourself with people that are nurturers rather than naysayers at first. In particular, you don't want to crush your little plant that's just trying, you know, the plant of your blossoming, you
mm-hmm,
know,
mm-hmm.
just shooting through the soil. So I think it's very important to be protective of yourself in that way. Identifying obstacles, what I always do is I have a motto for myself, and that is that I prepare for the worst and I envision the best. I don't just hope for the best. We were talking about this earlier, I envision the best.
Mm-hmm.
I imagined my book, for instance, being in the window of bookstores before I'd even written a word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it did end up in the window of some bookstores. I went up to Maine to give a talk, and there was my book in the window of the bookstore.
Very good.
So, you know, envisioning the possibilities. There's a power to vision. But mm-hmm. I think it's also important to be cognizant of what can happen. And, for instance, you know, here's an example, and that is that, you know, money for a lot of people can be an obstacle, especially in these times. Oh, my gosh, Dotsie, I just got my heating bill today. I don't even want to talk about the price of oil.
Right.
I completely believe, what I'm trying to say is, I applaud, believe, and support anybody that wants to shoot for the stars, but it sure doesn't hurt to have your feet on the ground at the same time that your head is in the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, it can be really critical in terms of the success of an endeavor. So, for instance, let's say you want to go to cooking school. It might be wiser to go to an affordable local community college program than to the Culinary Arts Institute if you have no money, because it's harder to guarantee that you're going to be able to get back that money in the long run
mm-hmm.
From a cooking career than, for instance, if you went to a business program. But there's another element of this that I think is more inspiring than what I just said, which is that, and here's an example of this, it's great to persist. I mean, I can talk and talk and talk about the importance of persistence, but because most people give up on their dreams too soon. But there are times when you just beat your head against the wall because you're facing discrimination or a lack of money or this or that. And I would say at that juncture, try to rethink the way you're doing it, and maybe you can find a way around the wall instead of plowing through it, or maybe you can dig under it, or maybe you can, you know, climb over it. For instance, Evelyn Gregory, a woman that I interviewed that became a flight attendant at 71, as you might imagine, you know, hit a wall of discrimination when she tried to get a job. She applied to job after job after job, and door after door shut in her face. She got a bright idea, a creative idea. She thought to herself, why don't I become a gate agent at some airline and let the management get to know me? Let them know right at the beginning, I want to be a flight attendant, but let them see how energetic I am, how good I am with people. 6 months later, they hired her as a flight attendant. She flew for 8 years. So, you know, she wasn't unrealistic about the obstacles. She knew what was going on. She decided to try anyway, but then she regrouped. And so that's my tip for that.
Cool. Okay, very good. All right, let's see. How can we...
We have to streamline this.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking at this thing. Oh, we have to. But basically, living in reality is a good part of, is a piece of what you mentioned, too. We just have
feet
to.
Feet on the ground.
Yes.
Head in the clouds.
Right. I mean, because I think one of the reasons people step out but fail is because they haven't looked at the whole picture. You know, or they've just gotten so excited and stepped too quickly. Okay, how about turning dreams into goals?
This is part of having your feet on the ground. It's great to say, and I'll use myself as an example, I want to write a novel. Well, let's talk about Defying Gravity, because that's already done. There I was, didn't have any writing experience, had never written a book, and what I first did is I broke it down, you know, I had no idea how to start, but from just my basic experience of life, I wrote in my journal, the first day I got the idea, a list of steps. This is part of breaking dreams into goals.
Mm-hmm.
I listed a list of steps of what I thought it would take to get a book published, you know, where I would find the people. I thought about putting ads in certain places. I wrote that on my list, getting releases, you know, taking a writing course. You know, I mean, I had this whole list of things that I thought I would need to do to be able to make this very clear vision that I had, this inspiration, a reality. And then I started putting timelines on those goals.
Oh,
I broke
good.
It down as smart as to as little steps as I could imagine without, you know, that I would still be making progress, but I wouldn't intimidate myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I said, I put deadlines. You know, by next Thursday, I will have drafted an ad to put in, you know, different, like Art Magazine, or, you know, different periodicals that go to people that are midlife and beyond, boomer publications. So
Right.
I that's how you break it down. It's very simple.
Okay. All right. And in doing that, there's that accountability piece, too. And, you know, something else that I will throw in here, that it's not really what the call's about, but turning dreams into goals, I think, can, what you know, once you have your thought, your idea, your business, your whatever it is you want to transition to, I think it's really important to work with a coach. And now some of what Pril has said is very similar to working with coaches. And that is holding yourself accountable by writing things down with dates, et cetera, getting a bold partner, you know, those types of things. They hold you accountable just like a coach does. And midlife coaching is very big right now, and there's a good reason for it because it's not the same as therapy. It is, and it's life-changing, and you're held accountable each week. Like, you know, when you work with a coach, by the next time you meet, you have to have certain tasks done. And if you're doing them by yourself, I know very well I can put them off and put them off. And a month can go by, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I never did the next step. You know, just other things are going on with the sites, whatever, and then I'm like, oh, you know, I really need somebody to hold me accountable. And coaches can do that. So can friends, partners, you know, however you want to go about that. Okay, we have like 10 minutes left. How about creating the action plan to get started?
Well, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about this coaching thing because this can actually be part of getting the action plan to get started.
Yeah, sure.
You know, we share more than we don't share as human beings. We have more commonalities than we have differences.
Mm-hmm.
We share not only DNA, but we share, again, as I was saying, so many of the same fears, hopes, et cetera. But we do have differences, and whereas some of us really need somebody outside to hold us accountable, and this is part of the action plan of getting started, you know, finding the coach or finding a support group or getting the bold partner or whatever it takes to get you, you know, started. The action plan has to do with the timetables and actually, you know, taking the step by step by step. But some people, and I would include myself among these 8 years ago, today I'm much more eager and willing to join with other people, to join a group, to get a coach. I was just thinking yesterday how I took a speech class last year, one-on-one coaching about doing public speaking in the city to ramp up my speaking, where the woman videotaped me every day, et cetera, and it seemed like a lot of money when I signed up for it. And 8 years ago, I wouldn't have spent it, which is the point I'm going to get back to in a minute when I wrap up this little segment of what I'm saying. But I have made enough money at this point that I was willing to invest the money in myself, and I was just thinking today that that money has come back to me, you know,
absolutely,
tenfold that I
mm-hmm.
spent, and it was money well spent on myself. And I would say the same thing about coaching. But for me, 8 years ago, to wrap this up, I didn't want to spend money on myself. I wasn't making money. I had quit my job, really gone out on a limb, quit my day job to write a book, you know, that I'd never
mm-hmm.
written before, that I wasn't even sure was going to get published. And I didn't really like groups of people. I mean, I love people, and I love people one-on-one. But, you know, I didn't really want to join a group. And So what I did, it's just like calorie counting. You know, if you're the kind of person that can go on a diet and list your calories each day, you're probably the kind of person that without a coach can make a list for yourself. I did this with promoting the book. I would make myself, you know, do 25 things a week to promote the book, and I would just keep a list, and I'd write 1 through 25 on a sheet of paper, and by the end of the week, I would make sure that even if I had to do 20 on the last day, you know, I would make sure I did it. So some people have, it depends on one's inner resources, but, and that's not, it's just what it is. It's not a positive or negative, but there are a lot of ways to do this, and the bottom line is, and I guess we can kind of end the segment by saying, the point is just do it. You know, you've got to just take a step, even if it's a step towards just figuring, you know, trying one little interest, you know, taking a little half-day seminar on something. Great. You know, you might not even, that might not even be your passion of passions, but just take a step outside of the normal. If you keep doing what you're doing, you'll keep getting the same results. If you do it a little different, you'll start getting a little different results.
Yeah, and, you know, I can share that I recall having this idea to give Boomer Women a voice. You know, I guess it was like over 6 years ago. And one of the first things I did, because I knew I had to do it online, I knew I wanted to do it online, was there was this couple in our church at the time, and he owned a web business, and he designed sites. And so I just thought, I just need to talk to him and just tell him what I'm thinking. And that was kind of one of the first steps. And once I talked to him and his wife, who actually is the one who ended up designing the site, it just took off. And then it was like, okay, I told him my thoughts. And then it's like, all right, when are we meeting again? And when are we meeting again? And so for me, it was just saying, you know, all right, make the call. and in many cases, that's what it is.
I know.
So it's just that first step, and then things can snowball from there. So
Patsy, it's getting so late, and we haven't let anybody ask anything, and we haven't gone over resources.
Okay, let's go over resources, and then we'll open the lines for questions. Okay.
Well, resources, I can't recommend enough, and not just if you're wanting to do something overtly creative, but if you're stuck in your life in any way, the Artist's Way series by Julia Cameron is just, it was so helpful for me in writing Defying Gravity, and her new Walking in the World series has been helpful for me in writing my novel, and I just can't recommend her enough. That's Julia Cameron, The Artist's Way.
And you know what? I'll interject something here very quickly.
Yes.
Some towns, and I know in Baltimore, there are actually places that have classes for The Artist's Way. So really, you know, kind of be on the lookout. Go online and Google and see, because they can, you can do The Artist's Way, but it's good. Some people like to do it with a group or in a class, and that can be done too. Okay, so
she also goes speaking around the country. I actually, you know, met her one-on-one at one point, and through the Learning Annex in New York City, I was, you know, it was an offer that they had, and I did just an evening seminar with her. So she does short versions as well. Moving on, I don't know if you've heard of Barbara Scherr. Have you, S-H-E-R? Do you know who she is, Dot?
No, I haven't, no.
She's written a wonderful, wonderful book called Wishcraft, one word, Wishcraft, How to Get What You Really Want. PBS, in our local area, the New York metropolitan area, has done a series on TV with her. She lives locally here, or at least at one point she did. Anyways, it's a wonderful, very, very helpful book.
Mm-hmm.
If you're discouraged and feel like, oh my gosh, I've got so many obstacles, now this is a little bit of a stretch for some people because it's a difficult, very inspiring but difficult movie to watch, but I highly recommend a movie called The Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Ooh, okay.
The Diving Bell and the Butterfly. It's about a man who is paralyzed and can only move his left eye. That's all he can move in his entire body.
Okay.
He can't speak. He can't do anything. He can move his left eye. He can blink one eye. And he writes this incredible memoir that gets made into a movie. And, you know, if you think, I was talking about the blind guy that can, you know, fly a plane, or the deaf person that can, you know, if you feel like, I mean, it's just so incredibly, it's a beautiful, beautiful film and so incredibly inspirational.
Okay.
Another film for late bloomers, and it's about a man, but I think it's inspirational as well, and it's called The Rookie. I don't know if anybody's...
The Rookie.
The okay. Rookie, yeah. It's a great movie as well.
Okay.
Online, I have links on my website and my blog to a number of resources, including the NABBW
and
Boomer Women Speak, resources for late bloomers, authors, etc.
Okay, well, Prill, you need to tell everybody your web address.
Perfect, and I'll spell it.
Okay.
It's www.prillboyle.com. That's P-R-I-L-L-B-O-Y-L-E, B as in Bob, O-Y-L-E, prillboyle.com. If you're wondering, Prill stands for Priscilla. I've always been called Prill. And, Dotsie, I think you're going to make an offer, too, aren't you? Aren't we going to offer something?
Well, yes. Actually, if you are a member of the NABBW, Prill has been kind enough. She is not doing any coaching. It's just something that she's offering out of the goodness of her heart. If you're on the call and you're interested in trying to find your midlife purpose or passion, she is willing to correspond with you by email and kind of help you on your way, maybe encourage you to take the first step or the third step or whatever it is. And then she's also willing to talk to anyone about writing and publishing, writing and getting published.
Writing, so, publishing, and promotion as well.
And
that's
promotion.
That's a whole huge area.
Okay. And that's really kind, and I appreciate that. So why don't you give them your email address, Prill?
Great. My email is easy. It's Prill again, P-R-I-L-L, at prillboyle.com.
Okay. And then also for people who are on the call or listen or read this at a later date, you can email me at dots@nabbw.com, and I will send you the link to join for $50. I already got one while we were here on the computer.
Oh,
I mean, while we were here on the call.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so anyway, let's see. There's another call in the series, which won't be for 2 weeks, but look at your updates and check the site. And let's see if anybody has any questions for Prill. If you have a question, all you have to do is push the 6 button if you muted yourself, and we'll be able to hear you, and you can go ahead and ask Prill your questions. Does somebody have a question? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Do you have a question? Prill, was that you saying hello or someone else?
I'm sorry. I thought somebody said hello and then I said hello, but maybe you said hello and then
okay.
I said hello.
Okay,
maybe
okay.
Nobody said hello.
Okay, all right.
So maybe not.
Okay. I hear somebody. Okay, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
My name is Charlene.
Okay, hi, Charlene.
And this is my first seminar, and I'm just thrilled that I got to talk to you, Prill.
Oh, good.
I am a widow for 4 years, and all of my children live out of state. I am an active human being with a sharp mind who wants to use this time in my life to have my next beginning.
Mm.
I have to define talents. I have done a lot of life coaching in previous years, but after I lost my husband, I didn't do too well. Mm-hmm. But now it's 4 years later, and I'm ready to start again. But I'd like to go into something where I would be corresponding more. Where would you send me?
I didn't hear the very last sentence. What did you say? I mean, I got that that your children live out of state, that you're a widow. What I loved is that you described yourself as being active with a sharp mind and looking for a new beginning, because you've got right there everything you need. You've got the energy, you've got the desire, and you've got the openness. So all of that is great. But I didn't hear the last sentence you said about corresponding. Could you repeat that for me?
I would like to get into something where I would be more on a one-to-one basis, perhaps in an advisement type of thing, or go back into coaching, but maybe more into widows or things like that where I could help others.
Oh, well, it sounds like not only do you have this active mind and a sharp mind and openness and desire, but it sounds like you have something very precious, which is called clarity. In other words, you have a sense of, you know, what you would like to do. I mean, at least the beginning of it, that you can pull on that thread. And so what I'd say to you is, you actually, it doesn't sound like you really need very much advice. It sounds like what you need to do is actually take a little step and pull on the thread of that. And I don't know, I can't tell you exactly where. You're welcome to email me, and I can mm-hmm. think about this a little bit more and help you think it through. But on the phone here, I can't quite say to you, you know, it's not popping into my mind, oh, I think you should check this out.
Okay.
But I do feel like, wow, you've got everything you need, and just start pulling on the thread of that, and something will manifest.
Sure. And Charlene, may I ask if you're a member of the association?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Okay. You know what? Look in the newsletter that's coming out on Thursday, I believe it is, the 15th. There's going to be a banner ad, and it's about a coaching program. So you mm-hmm. might want to click on that and see if it appeals to you.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Nancy.
Yeah, and actually email me, and I can even send you the link or whatever, you know, if you don't see it in the newsletter, but it'll be there.
Great.
Okay.
And thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Sure. Thanks for being on the call. I'm glad you broke yourself into the teleseminars.
Very, very happy about this. Very happy.
Good.
See, you're already taking a step. You're already taking steps. This is really wonderful.
Well, I decided when I turned 60 I wasn't going to sit here and get the rocking chair out.
Good for you.
I can tell you're not going to do that.
Okay. And you know what? You should. I will mention Prill's book again, Defying Gravity, because if you read what other women have done in their 50s, 60s, and even 70s, mm-hmm. you will definitely feel encouraged. And you can find her book at Amazon, right, Prill?
Right, Amazon.com. Defying Gravity, Prill Boyle. That's
yep.
all you
right.
need.
Yep.
Thank you
exactly.
so much again.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Charlene.
Okay, we'll take one more call. It's a little after 4, but if anybody else has a question, push the 6 button and let us hear from you. And if not... okay, yep, then I think we can end the call. Again, Prill's web address is prillboyle.com. You can email her at... You want to say your email address again?
Yes, it's prill@prillboyle.com. And from my website, I have a blog. And, you know, blogs sound a little dreary. I mean, everybody's got a blog these days. But I try to continue to tell stories of late bloomers, both men and women, on my blog. And so, you know, if you're looking for a little inspiration, a little jolt, it's a good place to go. And you can link into that from my website.
Okay, good. And you can find me at... NABBW.com, which is for the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, and also at BoomerWomenSpeak.com. And if you want to jump in the forums at BoomerWomenSpeak.com, I think that you'll be happy with what you find. You can read a lot before you jump in, but once you jump in, I think you'll enjoy it. So, Prill, I just want to thank you for being on our second call in the series of 3, and I just look forward to talking to you and communicating with you online.
Me too. Thank you so much, Dottie.
You're very welcome. Have a great day, and thanks for being on the call, everyone. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Great.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.